What's up, everybody? Michael Johnson here with the Business Choreography Podcast, and I'm excited you joined me today because today we have a very special guest. Today, Tyler Young is joining us on the show. Tyler is the driving force behind Versatech, the payment or the parent company of Tonic and Bold Integration Integrated SIS Payments, revolutionizing the hospitality sector with sophisticated payment processing and point-of-sale technology. His fintech journey, fueled by a passion for innovation and customer engagement, has established Versatech as a leader in the user-friendly, efficient solutions supported by strong local partner network. Guys, that doesn't even do justice for how cool Tyler is. I can't wait for you to meet him. He's exciting. He is one of a kind. And we're going to cue the intro and we'll jump right in. Listen, there's a lot to learn when growing and scaling your business.
That's why we created the Business Choreography Podcast, where we talk about choreographing your marketing, operations, and sales into dynamic systems that increase your revenue and your impact.
We'll explore solid business principles and discuss all things that make businesses dance to success with clarity.
We'll help you figure out where the holes are in your business and what you can do to fix them. Think of us as your official business choreographers, aka your insider growth strategists.
Remember, your choreography matters. Welcome to the Business Choreography Podcast. Tyler, welcome to the show. It is a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for inviting me on the show, Michael. I'm really excited to be here. And I have to say, that was a heck of an opening. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks. It is fun. We love choreography. We love the concept and idea of creating experiences. And we love to be able to bring on experts such as yourself to be able to share with us how you've created amazing choreographed experiences in your space. But before we get to all the cool stuff that you're going to share with our audience today, we got to start from the beginning, start from the journey, because I know it's a winding road. It's never a straight line. And sometimes I think it's important to make sure that all of those listening, the entrepreneurs listening, know that there's some others going through it, just like they are. So start us from where you'd like to start in the beginning and how you got to here doing this cool stuff that you're up to today.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. My journey as an entrepreneur started in all the way back into probably middle school. It's a fun little story, something I think a lot of parents should do with their children. But my dad taught us a valuable lesson when he owned a nursery, and he said he'd buy 500 trees and split the profits with me and my two brothers. He'd pay for everything and he would split the profits in half and then into thirds. 5 years later, after trimming the trees, planting the trees, potting the trees, and selling the trees, my brothers and I each pocketed $3,300. And it was fantastic. I was a freshman, I think, in high school at the time I got the funds. And my dad gave me an option. He said, you can either reinvest and buy 500 trees of your own, or you can take the money. Well, my brothers and I all decided we would reinvest the $3,300 to buy 500 trees, because that quick math added up to about $20,000 in profit if we just did the same thing again. Well, I learned another valuable lesson, because the market crashed in 2008, about the time that we were ready to harvest, you know, to sell the trees. And we got to the point where we couldn't sell them. And my dad taught me another lesson. He said, we're not going to flood the market and sell these trees cheap. So we were able to offload some and cover our basic costs, but then we piled them all up because we were on leased land that raised the prices, and we burned them all. And so I went from having a lot of money in middle school from this venture to then losing it all. And that little cycle of life that I went through for business taught me a lot and prepared me for becoming an entrepreneur.
Holy cow. You had to sit there and watch that burn. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I definitely wanted to sell it to a landscaper client of mine. And I sold him like 12 of the trees for like $15, and they were $80 to $120 trees all day long.
Wow.
But ultimately decided that we would not flood the market and get off the land, save a little resources. And, you know, I often think my dad was teaching us lessons and his advice through all of that. And he said, count your blessings while you have them.
Nice. I love that. Well, entrepreneurial from the early days. And so, holy cow, now doing all sorts of crazy things. So how did that lead you to starting your company, growing it to the size that it is, being in this space that you're in? Holy cow.
Yeah, I will guess I'll start with explaining where we are today. Today, I have 90 employees, you know, $52 million in revenue, 10,000 customers, a fintech company focused on payments and point of sale, and we serve partners. We have over 200 partners today. We really work with them. I'm an entrepreneur myself, and I want to empower other entrepreneurs. So today, we focus on building technology that entrepreneurs can use to build their business on. And all entrepreneurs generally have a lot of spirit, and they're not sure where to put that spirit. And then somewhere along the way, they have an idea or they come across something that sparks that idea, and they decide to go for it. So I like to think that we're just creating a product that entrepreneurs can grab a hold of and build a business around.
That is so cool. And talk to us a little bit more about what type of software that you guys are building. I mean, obviously there's a bunch of different things that you're into.
Yeah, absolutely. Our primary focus is teaching creators of software how to monetize payment processing. And that is our Bold Integrated Payments. That's where we have 200 partners, and we teach them how to monetize the merchant account in a white glove service way and with a lion's share of revenue. On the other side of the business, a lot of our partners that were VARs or value-added resellers, they sold someone else's software and they were able to monetize the payments. In the restaurant space, a lot of the technology was being bought, and therefore they were losing the agnostic option to utilize Bold for payment processing. And then therefore we offer now Tonic Point of Sale, which we launched last year and acquired the company out of Florida and rebranded to Tonic. And that is a hospitality, full service restaurant point of sale product for fine dining, restaurants, bar, nightclubs, quick serve. It's a really robust system. And that's really a big focus on our technology side to compete with Toast, because it's a well-known brand in the market. And within the next 24 months, I'd say you will see us as the number one resold point of sale restaurant product, and it will be Tonic, because our focus is on creating something that entrepreneurs can grab a hold of and want to give a high level of service, go to their local community and install a product and know that that product's going to stand behind them. And our contract's really favorable. But I just wanted to get the precedence of where I am today, because it's been a fun journey to just even get here. I've launched the company in I was 23 years old when I started my first real business, I would say. I don't count the ice cream business I started there in high school, but I have a lot of passion for ice cream, especially Ben and Jerry's. Thing for me to have it. And I just found the yearbook recently, because I moved to Georgia, and I found the yearbook, and it says right there is a quote in there, the ice cream was great. And I was like, no way. This passion for ice cream has carried with me for a long time. Nice. And why did I start the business? I wanted financial security for friends, family. I grew up in the hospital system. A lot of people are born into it, but I grew up there. My brother, when I was still in my mom's tummy, was diagnosed with leukemia at 23 months. And so 5-6 years, we just battled leukemia. And so I was just in and out of the hospitals, away from the home, basically living at Fred Hutchinson's hospital there in Seattle for the last couple of years. And I just grew to connect with a lot of people that didn't survive, didn't defeat cancer. I'm happy to report my brother did. He's 40 years old. And it really gave me a spirit that anything is possible. And I'm very optimistic, and I feel like we'll always work things out. It could also be a con. Sometimes you don't see the trickster in front of you. But that led me to want to just provide for everybody and achieve fulfillment. And that's what has led me to be Tonic and Bold today with, 5 M&As in the last year and a couple of ones in process now, just to build a business that takes care of people.
I love that. And what a cool mission. Let's talk a little bit about the process of going from 16 to 90. I mean, that's a big jump. And a lot of times entrepreneurs are in that space to stay lean and mean. And then sometimes you have to make that next step and start growing, because if you want to serve and if you want to continue to help people and based off of the mission that you've just described, you got to go through that phase and through that, uh, through that growth. Talk to us about that and talk to us about the process of building the culture to be able to grow from 16 to 90.
I appreciate that question, Michael, because it all starts with just a decision and a choice. Being a lean company is something I was proud of for a very long time. I was 14 to 20 employees for, I don't know, let's call it the first 10 years of my business. And I was happy. Quite frankly, I got better rest than I do now. I had a lot more free time than I do now. My right-hand leadership team smiled a lot more. And in 2017, we decided we were going to do more. And it was a conscious decision for myself that, okay, I have done well. I've reached my financial stability that I was hoping to achieve. And it was just a conscious decision to say, okay, let's go for big. And when you go for big, you have to go for it all. And most entrepreneurs set their sight on something and that's what they go after. And they grind all day long. And that's what we did. So from 2017 to 2019, we made maneuvers and really stayed the same size as an organization. And then from 2019 to now, we've grown to 90 employees, which is a lot. I could tell you there's a lot of learning curve when you hit 50. And as you reach 100, there's a lot of questions that also get brought up. And the journey has been challenging. I would say that if an entrepreneur decides to go from I've made it to I'm going to go big, there's a lot that they need to learn.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and one of those things is culture. And as we chatted before the show, we wanted to kind of jump into the idea of the importance of culture. I know way back in the day, I've been around the block a few times myself. And I remember when Zappos came on the scene and started changing the idea in the corporate world about what culture should be like and what company culture should really operate as and what kind of things they could do to just sort of push the business world into a better direction. So talk to us about your thoughts about culture and what you believe about it and what you've been doing to really head that up.
I was asked recently, you know, what's something that has been my biggest challenge in my career. And my biggest challenge in my career was just believing that I could do everything and the willingness I had to do everything. And I prided myself in the amount of hours I worked, how often I worked, the weekends and nights, and I led by example. And I think of that as a weakness now because I was unwilling to embrace the talent of other people. I was unwilling to invest in the talented people because I could do it. So therefore, I didn't need that person. And it allowed me to be very lean and profitable, but at the sacrifice of my personal life. And it was very challenging because I took on all the problems. And therefore, I realized in order to grow, I needed to trust in others, elevate and delegate and invest in their professional development journey and not just my own. And therefore, creating a culture that would attract talent that would want to ride the journey with me. And what's really important to me is feeling safe. And as I've developed this business and a leadership team around me, I know that no matter what happens, these individuals are here to support me. And there's that safety brings a high level of confidence and comfort. And I think that everyone looks for that in their work environment and in their personal lives. Like we get in relationships because those relationships make us feel safe. We have someone at home. We can let our guard down, we can cuddle, we can snuggle, and we can feel good. And in the work environment, you often can walk on eggshells. And if you don't like the person you're next to, you don't want to go to work, you're not bringing the best out of you. And being a small company that is self-funded, we haven't raised any funds, and we're, you know, targeting businesses of billions of dollars as our competitors, I really understood I wanted to have fun doing it and I needed people that wanted to be a part of it with me. And therefore, investing into those individuals as if they're family and friends. For example, I have done a lot for the employees. I have an employee right now with a loved one in the hospital, and I'm going to go there tomorrow. You know, it's immediately, I was asked, well, why do you need to show face? I was like, no, I have an employee going through a difficult time. I want to go there and support them. And it's setting that tone as the leader and trickling that down, that everybody does matter. And it's one of our core values, which is we're a people first organization. And I think that a lot of companies have to understand what their core values are. They can't just care about their people. Like, I care about my people. It's because of my upbringing, and that I really do genuinely want everyone to feel safe. Right. And when they feel safe, they do their best work. It is a win-win for me. And I have a lot of one-on-ones. So to develop that culture, you have to prioritize and understand that people are going to have their own lives, and those lives will, no matter what, impact them at work. And therefore, I'll be in one-on-one meetings and, you know, can tell that there's something off. And I have sacrificed many work hour discussions to go into what is going on in the personal life, to allow a therapeutic session where the person can just speak, be heard, be validated, be supported. And what I've seen that do is allow the person to leave the meeting and make the most out of the rest of the day. And if I just would have crammed down work and responsibilities and tasks and projects, I would have gotten answers, but they wouldn't have been present because of what else is going on in their lives. And I would rather help them process that so that the next day and the next week and the next month and the next year, when they come to work, they know that they're supported and that they can share what's going on. And in the end, it's just a win-win. So the culture that I really recommend businesses, if their core values align, because you cannot be what you are not. And there are plenty of businesses that are out there that have a lot of turn and burn in employees. And in a tech space, we can, you know, work anywhere. So we have the advantage of investing into the relationship with the individual. And we, our average tenure at the company, you know, even when we decided to go big, it was 6 years, you know, 6 years in what, 2019 or so. And we pay out a time appreciation bonus. And we focus in and reminding everybody how much we appreciate that they choose to invest their time, because it's their number one asset, into my vision. And if they're going to invest their time into my vision, I want to show my appreciation for that and that they adopt that vision. So it sounds small, but we pay $100 a year for every employee, and that accumulates. And we have a lot of employees now over 10 years, and they really do appreciate it. The highest one, I think, is $1,400 or $1,500. And so this year we paid out, I think, $25,000 in our time appreciation bonus. And that's with adding, we added 47 employees in 2023. And so even with adding that many employees, we still have that type of tenure at the company. And little things like that, they will make a difference. And if your team wants to be there, they'll work for you. You know, they'll want to work for you and not for a paycheck.
Right. Well, and like you said, there's so much value in understanding and realizing that that time isn't, that's probably their biggest commodity. And many people don't realize that. But when you respect that on the top end, they start to respect that from you as well. And it always goes two ways. There's no doubt about it. So being able to be able to give that, they start to give that back, and it's easy to have that reciprocated. And that's what starts to fuel growth in a really positive way. What kind of things did you do to affect that culture? I mean, a lot of people have a hard time understanding how to create that culture. They're like, do I just sit down and talk about a mission statement, or do I, like, how do we do that? Right. So how did you go about starting to create that and make that a thing as you grew?
That's a really tough question to answer, because everything is top-down leadership. And it starts with the ability for the leader to communicate and establish culture. It starts literally at the CEO level and goes down. And therefore, some cultures can be limited based on someone's ability to communicate. It is an underrated skill at a leadership level. And I would encourage any leader that is uncomfortable speaking to their team or find themselves umming and aahing and stuttering, that they should focus on that. And it, They may not think they need to, but it actually does matter if you want to affect a culture within your team. And in my case, you know, I've been comfortable with those types of skills. And therefore, what I moved to was being vulnerable. Vulnerable trust is the best type of relationship anyone can establish. And I'm not a fan of surface level conversations. You know, what game did we like? Favorite sports team? It's how are you? How are you doing? And you can't force anyone to share, but you can choose to share and set a tone. So I'd advise anyone who wants to build a connection with their team, be willing to showcase their life, their struggles, their battles, and share it with the team. And you'll be surprised how quickly someone responds to you and wants to share back. And I started doing that, you know, that's all I ever did, quite frankly. And so when we were a smaller team, we didn't lose anybody practically. And I never recruited, never ran employment ads. I mean, if I did, it was by a sales manager when we had a call center and we used a temp agency. But the team that stuck with me, everyone just kind of showed up by a friend or a family member. And it's because they felt loved and cared for. And this is where I do mean it. Like, if you're a leader who is not built that way, you can try. But there are other ways you can run a company and build a culture. It, you know, you have to hire people that share your core values. I am hiring people that share the core value that they want to feel safe. They want to know their job is protected, that they're not terminated at the first sign of struggle or the first mistake. I just literally had my accounting department make a calculation error and overpayment yesterday. And I got on the HR meeting and I talked about how mistakes happen. They just do. It's human. Now, I said, if you transferred a bunch of money to some random account that we couldn't get, that's obviously you got to go. But an honest human mistake, and rather than a strong discipline, which may be required, I think the best way to affect the culture is to, the word I'm looking for here is just to talk to your team, communicate with your team. And if you make that team feel worse about their mistakes, the team, they feel so bad about the mistake that I don't have to actually punish or consequence or take any action, but they themselves feel bad, then you know they care about the organization and you don't have to come with a heavy hand. I once had an employee type in the wrong ACH information and she quit herself. I had to call her, say, "I'm not firing you. Please come back," and convince her, because she cared so much and she knew it was such a huge mistake to transfer these funds for one of our merchants into the wrong account, which we were able to capture the funds, that she actually left. Those are just signs that you have a culture that the team wants to be there and they care for the business. And what you can accomplish with that team is far beyond what large companies do when they just pay the highest dollars.
Right. When it's when you start talking about culture, it's so much more than the money. The money is certainly a driving force behind it, but there's so many more things that are valuable to the people that are on your team and working for you. You mentioned core values earlier, and how, you know, if somebody's looking at that and they're thinking, yeah, you know what, we really need to do some work on our culture. And, you know, I want to do something better with my core values. How do they discover what their core values are so that they can start to pass those on in a more succinct and clear way?
There's a lot of ways you can accomplish this. I'll share how I did it. And I worked through a program called Entrepreneurial Operating System, Michael. Are you familiar with EOS?
EOS, yeah.
Yeah, EOS. EOS has a focus day. They have a two-day program that you run through to help you determine what your core values are. And essentially, you take your ideal employee and you say, what are the characteristics of our most ideal employee? And you throw them all on the whiteboard. And then you take your leadership. What are the characteristics of your leader? And you throw them on the whiteboard. You end up with probably 20 or 30 characteristics. And you start picking them apart, saying, what are the ones that matter? And you're trying to target 3 to 5 for your business. And you break it down based on who you are. You can't think who I want to be. It's who are we? And that is something that people struggle with, because they'll put on there everything that they think they are. And they really have to ask themselves, do we live that day in and day out? And therefore, when you choose those 3 to 5 core values, say these are the characteristics. For example, we narrowed ours down into we serve. VersiTech serves. It started right there in our opening line that we understand we're here for the benefit of those around us and others. So we serve with a people first mentality. And we saw that as our characteristic of like, I want to go to the hospital tomorrow. I want to go. I don't need to go. I don't have to go. I want to go. So caring for others trumps other monetary decisions inside of our business. And that landed us on a people first mentality. And we want everyone in the organization willing to put the person first and make sure they see them as an individual. Okay, we serve through determination. We also serve through integrity. Those are 3 of our core values. And integrity is a pay to play. Sometimes you won't use that one, right, Michael, because it's there. But surprisingly, most companies may claim it, but it's pretty evident it doesn't exist. And in our organization where we're here to serve others, integrity is extremely important and we work with a lot of money. So therefore, we called that out. And so once you have the characteristics, you choose them, you decide if you want to put anything in front of it or not. For example, we're in the middle of changing our core values. We're going to embody the ones I have described, but we're going to make it a little bit more fun. We haven't announced it all to the team. I'm not sure. When are you going to air this, Michael? And I'll decide if I can share the new ones.
Oh, it'll be a little bit of time. So I think you probably have shared it before this is.
Okay. Well, I'll share it with the group here because I think we'll be sharing it February, you know, mid-February. But what we encapsulated is core values also don't need to just be a characteristic. They can be fun. They can be memorable and you want them and you want them short as possible and you want as few as possible. And therefore, we have shortened them now with a little bit more of a twist to we are people. And that core value just talks to we're human. Mistakes happen. We're individuals. We need to care about each other. We need to care about our partners. And we are all in. I think as an organization, it's incredibly important to have everyone that is truly here for our business. And we talked about the culture we are creating. We are all in means if you need time for your family or friends, the company will help you get that time. If the company needs you because we're facing a deadline, then you need to be there for the company. And it's not something we end up having to ask for because they're all in and it goes 2 ways, as you said earlier. You know, we're all in for them as individuals and they are all in for us as a company. And the last one is we dare to be different. Ultimately, as an organization, we don't like to take the path everybody else does. And therefore, we're looking for people who think outside of the box, who are willing to go swim upstream and challenge status quo. And here we are as a small company challenging billion-dollar organizations. And we're self-funded, which has been fantastic because I can make decisions that are people first because we don't have to do it all for the profit. That exercise is what I recommend everyone run through. And of course, if you haven't heard of EOS, I would go look up EOS and consider bringing that into your business.
I love that. Such a cool thing. I mean, it's, you know, company culture has really come a long way since people really started putting some attention to it and some of the old rhetoric from old corporate America started to fade away. I mean, I think there's still a lot there. But
I would agree.
You know, it's definitely businesses like yourself that are really challenging the status quo and really pushing people to, you know, other businesses in corporate America to start to listen and pay attention. You know, just the other day, I live in Utah and we were driving down the freeway and Adobe has opened up their buildings right off of the freeway. And inside there's these big glass windows and inside you can see a mountain climbing wall and a basketball court and they've got their own workout facilities. And, you know, they're just taking.
That's a dream right there.
How cool is that? Right.
And that is pretty cool.
They're just trying to do things for their employees and for their team members to really enhance their experience and their time being there in their institution and in their progression. And I think it's making a difference, you know, and I think that if you can put some attention and focus to it, it's going to make a really big impact on your company. I really appreciate you sharing that with us. I do want to kind of swing back around before we finish up and talk about how people can get in touch with you and why they would get in touch with you, and the ways that they can kind of interact and find where you're doing your stuff and your thing. So talk to us a little bit about that, because I can't let you go without them all out there. I mean, we talked about culture, but like, let's also talk about the cool things that you're doing so that they can see, hey, you know what? I need to get involved with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would recommend on our website is the best place for people to see what we're doing, and LinkedIn profile. We do a really good job on our Instagram and LinkedIn to be able to sharing insights into what we're doing as an organization and being vulnerable to the public. So if you find our LinkedIn for Tonic POS and Bold Integrated Payments, and I always invite people to my personal Instagram because I like to share my story and my journey. And that's, you know, I think it's at TylerYo415. It's a great place to connect with people. And I was recently on a reality television show called The Blocks. And I recommend if anyone wants to get a little bit more information or insight, I was on the show and I had basically 10 entrepreneurs a day, 15 minutes each per person for a consultation on a topic of the day. And it was a reality TV show. And it was a whole lot of fun as a judge. And there is a lot of context on The Blocks app. If you download it, there's every interview that I did that someone can watch. And I'm gonna be honest, I really prided myself in having a subject of the day and not repeating any advice, period. And I did not, I believe I did not anyways, actually give the same advice, having 8 to 10 people in a room talking about the same topic. And it was a big challenge, and I would recommend someone to download that. And I think there's a lot to learn there.
Cool. That's amazing. Well, we'll definitely put all of those links and the different ways they can connect with you in the description, and we'll make sure to direct everybody there. So everybody watching, listening, check out the description to get those links and go check out what Tyler has built and all the cool things that they're doing. It is some cool stuff. Tyler, before I let you go today, can you leave us with some sage words of wisdom?
I certainly can. I am blessed with a friend who cares about me so much. He sends me daily advice, and it seems to always be relevant. And I would encourage you to surround yourself by individuals who challenge you to be a better version of yourself and who are challenging themselves to be a better version. You may have grown up with someone, you may love them, you may care for them, but if you have goals, you need to ensure to have someone around you holding you accountable to your goals. Mentorship's a great way. And remember, as an entrepreneur, if you have everything under control, you're not moving fast enough. And that's the one I got today. And it definitely hit home because I feel like I am moving too fast and embracing that advice.
I love it. I love it. Well, that's great. Thank you so much for being here with us and sharing your journey and sharing your knowledge and wisdom with our audience. I appreciate it so much. Guys, all of you out there listening, you know, take heed to what you heard today. Go back and listen again. This is some important stuff. I want you to realize, you know, part of why we bring the people that we bring on the show like Tyler is because we know how important it is for you to choreograph every part of your business. And there are a lot of pieces and parts, and there's a lot of a journey ahead of if you're going to do it right, as Tyler just mentioned, you know, you gotta push the limits. So keep remembering to choreograph your business, all parts of your business, regardless whether you think about it or not. That's why we're here. We're here to tell you and share with you some different perspectives, some different views about how you can keep choreographing your business. So keep doing that. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Tyler, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today.
Want more business choreography?
Check out our website at bizchoreo.com to find out more.
And find out how the choreography for your marketing, operations, and sales can raise your revenue and create more impact.
Remember, every business needs choreography.